the Iranian regime an olive branch in an effort to try to de-escalate the situation. We will see if they take that olive branch.
That's Fox's Trey Yingst in Baghdad. Stocks on Wall Street rising on hopes of easing Mideast tensions. And another recall from Takata affecting 10 million more front airbag inflators. America's listening to Fox News.
Rich Thomas Weather is brought to you by J.B. Windows and Siding, powered by Jones Brothers Roofing.
Quality, beauty, value, and more. J.B. Windows and Siding has what you're looking for.
Rich Thomas Weather.
Hi, everybody. Quiet weather for now. Lots of sunshine today. Should be nice. High in the low to mid-60s. Clear, chilly tonight. Low temperature 36. Tomorrow, warmer. High in the upper 60s. Still dry. Clouds increasing. Low 70s Friday, risk of a few showers, maybe a thunderstorm. Then Saturday, the concern continues to grow for severe weather. We are in an enhanced risk with the possibility of severe thunderstorms and tornadoes. Potentially a significant severe weather outbreak. We'll keep you up to date, and we want you to be weather aware. Get our weather app on your phone or tablet now. Go to the App Store, search Rich Thomas Weather. Saturday's high well up in the mid-70s. From the Blue Water Weather Center, this is Rich Thomas.
When you're shopping for a new car, truck, or SUV, getting a great rate shouldn't be a problem. ASE Credit Union makes auto loans easy with rates as low as 3.5% APR. Apply online or visit your local branch today. ASE Credit Union, your life, your goals, your ASE. Equal opportunity lender.
Alabama News Network, I'm Andrew James. The Montgomery City Council voted last night to form a committee to study the implementation of a 1% occupational tax. City leaders say that money would help fund the public safety department and other city projects. The committee will report its findings on February 4th. Governor Kay Ivey has appointed former Alabama State University professor Dr. Tommy Stewart to the State Board of Education. Dr. Stewart has been appointed to the District 5 seat, left vacant by the passing of Ella Bell. She died in November of last year. And a Millbrook woman has been charged with 21 counts of theft. 45-year-old Jennifer Rawls is accused of entering a Millbrook business several times between last November and December and failing to scan selected items before walking out of the store. And that's a look at today's headlines. For more on these stories and others, watch Alabama News Network on CBS 8 and ABC 32. I'm Andrew James.
The views and opinions of the following program are solely those of the host and other contributors. These do not necessarily represent those of Liberty Acquisitions 825, Blue Water Broadcasting, its management, staff, or any advertisers.
Lowe's has the supplies pros like you use most every day in the quantities you need, and will even help you save. Now during our Pro Paint event, pick up 5-gallon pails of Valspar ceiling paint for $28 less, now just $99. And get up to 30% off in-stock Owens Corning or Johns Manville fiberglass insulation when you buy 15 bats, 20 rolls, or 30 bags. And for a limited time, save an additional 5% just by using your Lowe's business credit account. Do it right for less. Start with Lowe's. Paint offer valid through 110. Insulation offer valid through 115. Credit offer valid 17 to 19. Subject to credit approval. Exclusions apply. U.S. only.
The new best friend moment. The is it my turn to get up moment.
Thanks, Dad.
The they grow up so fast moment. You experience a lot of moments in your home. And at Kidde, we're here to remind you that installing fire safety products can protect them all. So take a moment to shop Kidde today and protect a lifetime of moments ahead. Find Kidde products at the Home Depot.
What could Alabama do with $1 billion? Fund education, health care, public safety, improve the quality of life for all. The Porch Creek Indians have a solid plan for gaming to bring Alabama $1 billion. A game changer for our state. Visit winningforalabama.com, paid for by the Porch Band of Creek Indians.
Hi, this is Greg Schaefer with AKD Screen Printing, Embroidery, and Advertising Specialties. First, on behalf of our entire team at AKD, I'd like to wish you all a Happy New Year. We trust you enjoyed your holidays and wish you a blessed and successful 2020. I'd also like to extend a sincere thank you to all of our customers for your patronage and loyalty over the past 33 years. Whether it's printing shirts for our Alabama and Auburn fans or designing that perfect gift for your school or business, delivering custom decorated apparel and promotional products on time at a competitive price is what we do best. And we hope that you continue to give us that opportunity for years to come. You can find us in Montgomery at 277-8433, in Prattville at 361-2133, or online at goakd.com. That's goakd.com. And please remember, AKD is your home for custom screen printing, embroidery, and advertising specialties.
The River Region's News Talk Station. News Talk 93.1, WACV. News Talk 93.1.
I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity. Allegiance, my love, and my devotion to the flag, our standard, old glory, a symbol of freedom. Wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United, that means that we have all come together. States, individual communities that have united into 48 great states, 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose, all divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose, and that's love for country. And to the Republic, Republic. A state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people. And it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people, for which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others, for all, which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance, under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer, and that would be eliminated from schools too?
It's the Dan Morris Show. Join the conversation by calling 272-9228. And now, here's Dan Morris.
59 degrees outside. The stock market, let me take a look at it, is up 187 points. Let me bring in Mr. Producer himself, the one and only Joey Clark.
Hello. Hello.
How you doing today? Big guy.
No, I just got done with a three-hour radio show. Time to do another one.
There you go.
No, I'm
just when you thought you were getting it right.
I know. There's so much going on, though.
Oh, man. I need to open up with a couple of things. One, some sad news. We had a personal friend of mine. His family's been friends for over 25 years. Dr. Rick Love, the Love Doctor, passed away Monday night.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. And I would really love for you guys to say a little prayer for the Love family, Candy, his wife, and the kids, and just that God's peace may be on them, and that God just take Rick in his arms and hold him and hold his family here on earth. He was really had a missionary heart. Where did he? He helped Greg Budell out when he was having his ear problems, and resolved that real quickly. But a great guy, and it was sad. I heard about it after the show yesterday. Very, very sad. He's a great guy, but he passed away on Monday night. Then on the lighter side, good news side, went to Vintage Year last night for Hamburger Night.
I called Dan last night. I'm like, you watching this? When the news broke, and he said, no, I'm at Vintage Year. I'm like, well, that's a better thing than what I'm doing.
No, I just got back from Vintage Year, but I was went there, and they have the Alabama Burger, which is Wagyu with Kanaka sausage.
Oh, man.
I took my good friend Ricky Mims there. That was the first time he had been to Hamburger Night. He said it was the best hamburger he had ever had in his life.
I said, I
told you. But he had the regular VY burger. But the Alabama burger is something.
That Wagyu beef is fantastic. And to throw Kanaka on there is just, that should be illegal. I'm glad it's not.
Hey, psst. Come here.
Don't tell Mitt Romney, all right?
Psst, come here. You want some Kanaka sausage on your Wagyu? I got some here. Some good stuff, man. It was really good. Saw a lot of good people there last night. Haven't been in a while, and it was great to see everybody. But you got to try Hamburger Night. You got to try that Alabama burger. And tell me you're a damn show listener. I tell you, they are kicking it.
And that's only on the burger night when they do that?
Only on burger night. Okay. They have the VY burger on the menu all the time.
All right.
And I almost veered away from it because all the dishes, the specialties, sounded so good last night that I almost went the grouper route. But I said no, because I asked him, I said, you're going to have it on Friday, because I'm looking at going there Friday night with some folks. And it was really good. Okay, now, guys, we're going to have Dr. Sorensen calling in. And you're going to hear an interview that it's going to be very different than the stuff you're picking up on TV. We're going to get down into some real depth type things. I don't like the way these reporters kind of dance around things, particularly ABC, NBC, and CBS. I almost threw something, broke my TV. I was getting so mad at how they were handling this. Oh, the threat's still out there. The specter of death is just right around the corner. These guys just can't take a win to save their lives. So let me go to a break. Coming back to Dr. David Sorensen, you are going to love this interview.
Show.
Turn on. Tune in.
News Talk 93.1 FM.
He may not know whether he's coming or going, but whether you're going to work or coming home, Greg Budell is there. Mornings 6 till 9 and afternoons 3 till 6. Only on News Talk 93.1 FM WACV.
Alabama Home Mortgage is in the business of saving you money. Hey there, I'm Kim Williams along with Madeline Cannon. Figuring out new ways to stretch your mortgage dollar is what we do at Alabama Home Mortgage.
Here's the deal. Getting started is as simple as dialing 567-4223. In fact, why not try doing that right now?
You'll be amazed at the amount of cash you can save. So please, don't wait any longer. Call 567-4223 right now.
A retired Air Force pilot in Pike Road was experiencing some turbulence with his money, so he called Alabama Home Mortgage to see what we could do to help.
We lowered his monthly payment by $587, reduced his term by 5 whole years, and allowed him to skip 2 mortgage payments. With Alabama Home Mortgage as his co-pilot, he was able to soar to new financial heights.
Take advantage of today's low rates and reduce your monthly burden much sooner than you thought ever possible.
10 minutes is all it takes to find out how much you can save.
Let us show you the Alabama Home Mortgage difference.
Call 567-4223 or visit us at alahomemortgage.com to apply today. NMLS 1586-368, Equal Housing Lender.
Live local talk. The River Region's only 24-hour News Talk FM station. News Talk 93.1 FM WACV.
Now, back to Dan Morris on News Talk 93.1 WACV.
272-9228 is where we are. Okay, boys and girls, when we have something going on in the Middle East, and we did have something going on in the Middle East last night, we bring in our good friend, Middle East expert, Dr. David Sorensen. Dr. Sorensen, welcome aboard the Dan Morris Show.
Thank you very much, Dan.
This is going to be a little bit different interview than we normally do. I want to try to get into some technical things. Let's start out with some of the mechanics of the strike. There were 15 missiles that were fired, 4 that failed, 11 that hit. Let's talk about the accuracy of these. Were they ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, or a combination thereof?
These were intermediate-range ballistic missiles, developed initially by from some old Russian designs and modified by the Iranians. Ballistic missiles are can actually make them more accurate than cruise missiles. You have the technology. And these missiles actually did what they were supposed to do. As far as we can tell, the Iranians launched them at a time when they didn't expect Americans would be up and around, and they apparently hit on the fringes of these bases. One of them apparently got close to housing, but that suggests pretty good accuracy. The Iranians have been testing these things for many years. They actually began to use them back in the early 1980s, so they've had time to develop them pretty well.
Is this a built off of the model of the Scud? Or is it more accurate than the Scud?
It's more accurate than the Scud. It's a modification of kind of the forerunner of the missile that came after the Scud. The Scud was really kind of a piece of junk, even when the Russians stuff. Well, you remember Saddam Hussein, who launched lots of kind of modified Scuds. He tried to make them better and made them worse, and most of them fell apart. These missiles are a lot better. A couple of them did fail. I don't know exactly how many. I've seen competing numbers, but enough got in at least to send a competing message. We will retaliate, but the retaliation will be limited. And the good thing about a ballistic missile is that, again, you can target it to do some real damage, but you can also send a signal by sending the missile and then program it to minimize the damage. And I think that's what the Iranians did.
Yeah, that's exactly that. A show attack, as we call it now. Let's talk about the two targets that they selected. Tell me the significance of the targets, because one is kind of a Kurdish stronghold, right?
Yes. In Erbil, it's a Kurdish stronghold, but it's also, under Saddam Hussein, a lot of Arabs were sent into Erbil specifically to settle there, to move the Kurds out. So, yes, it is. It is a Kurdish stronghold. Some argue that it's kind of the capital of Kurdish northern Iraq, but it's a real mixed population. It's interesting that Soleimani himself had very mixed relations with Kurdish leadership, particularly when he was trying to influence the political outcome in Iraq. He was the guy who kind of engineered al-Maliki to be the prime minister of Iraq, and in doing so, he had to convince the president, who was Kurdish, Barzani, to accept it, and apparently they had quite a quarrel about it. So whether or not that has something to do with the location is unclear, but the second air base, al-Assad air base, which is in Anbar province, that was the one base that President Trump visited on his only trip to Iraq. And I think that was probably symbolic, as it was hit at 1:05 in the morning, which is exactly the moment when the U.S. drone strike killed General Soleimani. So that was certainly symbolic as well.
Let's talk about the air base. I mean, if I'm reading it correctly, this air base is very expansive. It takes up a lot of area to try to protect the airbase itself. And it sounds like these, which is where most of the missiles went, that they were just kind of landing out in these kind of out areas away from the actual, they didn't tear up runways, hangars, and things like that.
They appear to have landed at least in the fringes. And some reports I've read say that, we heard explosions, but they barely rattled the windows, which means not only they were far away from the actual inhabited parts of the base, but that the warheads were not all that powerful. We've all heard explosives when in wartime, and they will rattle the windows. And if these didn't, that suggests that not only were they far enough away, but the Iranians didn't use the larger, more powerful warheads that these missiles are capable of carrying.
So this kind of seems like it was a show attack. In other words, they wanted to show strength and that they were doing something, but the intention was not to really kill anybody or blow up anything.
I think it had two purposes. It was initially designed to show that we will respond back, but the second purpose, I'm still trying to sift through the evidence, but I'm beginning to think that it may be the consequence of General Soleimani's death that the so-called moderates, the president, the foreign minister, have gained influence and managed to rein in the Islamic Republican Guard Corps, who works for the Ayatollah, and in many ways convinced the Ministry of Defense to launch a much more limited strike than the IRGC probably wanted. My sense is the IRGC was looking for perhaps an assassination of an American official, possibly a limited attack against Israel, and my sense is that the more reformist, less religious, less radical president, foreign minister have now climbed up the political ladder with the removal of General Soleimani, who was a loyalist to the Ayatollah, the more radical clerics. I don't know that for sure, but I think that this may be a sign that the death of General Soleimani may have exercised a moderating influence over Iranian politics, and if it has, I think that's a positive thing for the United States, for Israel, for Saudi Arabia, and certainly for the Iranian people, who are awfully tired of the radical clerics.
That's very interesting. So you're saying Soleimani being taken out, who was an aggressive terrorist, very much in control of his operation, the vacuum that he has created has created more of a moderate rise to power?
That's my sense right now. Again, I'm still sifting through evidence. I'm reading some of the Arabic papers. I'm looking through some of the Israeli papers. I find it interesting that even in the Iranian national news, you're not getting the kind of breastbeating, chest thumping kind of rhetoric that we got from the radical clerics. And so I think that is a possibility. General Soleimani, again, as I said last time, was maybe third or fourth in the organization chart, but in many ways, he was one of the most powerful people in Iran, and certainly powerful in Iran's foreign policy. It was he who negotiated with the U.S. to assist the U.S. in the operation against the Taliban in 2001. It was he who worked with the U.S. to help defeat ISIS on the ground while we supplied air forces. It was also he who probably did more to support Hezbollah in the 2006 war against Israel. Again, the more we learn about him, the more we realize how deep his hooks were. And so, again, I think his elimination may have had more of an impact on changing the course of Iranian policy than we initially realized.
Should I dare say, does this mean that we're closer to actually being able to negotiate with them on some type of arms deal?
I think that two comments, one by the president and one by Javad Zarif, the Iranian foreign minister, sense that direction is more likely. The president opened his speech by saying Iran will never get a nuclear weapon. But right. Then about three-quarters of the way into his speech, he did talk about the possibility of Iran becoming a more prosperous country, which would mean negotiations that would end the U.S. imposed sanctions in exchange for Iran's return to dismantling its nuclear program and possibly agreeing to some further restrictions, perhaps support for Hezbollah or even reductions in the ballistic missile program. I think the Iranians and the Americans are in a good position now to take advantage of these events to not only detune from the potential for escalation, but also to work towards improving relations. Because, again, as hostile as U.S.-Iranian relations have been since 1979 under both Republican and Democratic presidents, we do have common interests. We have common interests against the Taliban. We have common interests against al-Qaeda. And we certainly have common interests against ISIS, which unfortunately, contrary to what the president said, has not been 100% defeated. There's 10 to 20,000 ISIS members left in Syria and Iraq, and they're beginning to move again. So we have all kinds of incentives to begin cooperation with Iran, and it may be that now that we've both flexed our muscles, but in a more limited way, we may open the door to better relations. And if so, then President Trump will certainly get some credit.
Absolutely. The I noticed a real difference of last night versus today, where the disinformation campaign was really going out. You know, we've killed 32 Americans, wounded 200, which was totally untrue. And then this morning they were kind of mute with all of that.
Right.
Is that part of the change of power?
I think that could be well be. My sense is that the Islamic Republican Guard Corps pretty much controls Iran's propaganda machine, issued the first broadcast, which, again, yeah, was completely fictitious. But I think that, again, my sense is that the more reformist elements in Iranian politics may have flexed their muscles and said, okay, guys, that's not the message you want to send. The message you want to send is, okay, both sides have taken a punch, and we've managed to keep things limited. Let's not allow for escalation.
The president of Iraq was told that the missiles were coming, and we were alerted through intel chatter that happened through third party. That seemed very intentional, that we were kind of, they were signaling to us that it was going to happen. So don't get too worried. Is that the way you interpret that?
Yes. I think, yes. Iran directly signaled Iraq, and through that indirectly signaled the United States that, understand, we're going to have to do something, but right now it's going to be limited, and we're giving you an opportunity. You can prepare your defenses. You can put your forces into the bunkers. Missiles will be coming in, but we're going to try to limit it. Now that we've both taken a shot, let's see if we can hold this to a limited exchange and then try to move on.
Interesting. In looking at this, are there sleeper cells of Iran and their proxies in the United States, in your opinion?
I don't think that there are that many. Most Iranian Americans came here because they had supported the Shah and were fleeing the Iranian Revolution. And as far as I can tell, again, I don't have access to classified information, but as far as I can tell, Iran's effort to try to penetrate the Iranian American community has largely backfired. Recall that Iran, apparently under General Suleiman, tried to assassinate the Saudi Arabian ambassador to the United States a few years ago in Washington, D.C. Well, he thought he was negotiating with an Iranian American. Actually, he was negotiating with a plant, and of course the whole thing came unglued, which indicates to me that the Iranians really don't have good connections to sleeper cells in the United States, and they, in fact, badly miscalculated in American politics. So they've done much better where they have Shia in Iraq and in Syria and Lebanon, but not so well in the United States. So as far as I know, no.
Let me go to a break, Dr. Sorensen. We're going to be back right after this.
Your news talk place to be. The Dan Morris Show on News Talk 93.1 WACV. People are made of plastic. You know some people are made of wood. Some people have hearts of stone. Some people are to no good.
Carry News Talk in your pocket? Download the News Talk 93.1 app from the App Store. Available on iPhone and Android. Never miss a moment. Download now.
President Trump's top ally is Republican Bradley Byrne.
Work hard, right wrongs, fear God. Those were our values growing up here.
and I've always fought for them. When Alabama's two-year colleges were full of corrupt politicians, I drained the swamp and helped put politicians of both parties in jail.
Bradley Burns supports President Trump 97% of the time. He's Alabama's number one pro-Trump fighter.
Whether it's building the wall, banning abortion, or confronting Adam Schiff on the impeachment conspiracy to remove President Trump and undo the 2016 election, I'm a proven fighter for the president, and I will never allow the radical left to remove him from office. I'm running for Senate because I've spent my life righting wrongs, and Washington is next.
A man of God, a pro-Trump Republican, Bradley Byrne for Senate.
I'm Bradley Byrne, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Byrne for Senate.
Sounds like a job for AC by Luke Ryan.
Resolve to increase your comfort and reduce your energy bills with a new Carrier system during AC by Luke Ryan's New Year's resolution sale. Save up to 25% off a new Carrier system when you turn to the experts at Luke Ryan. Plus, you can get a one-year maintenance agreement and 10-year parts and labor warranty. Visit acbyluke.com today. That's acbyluke.com.
Sounds like a job for AC by Luke.
License number 84417.
Hi, folks. This is Rick Clark with Clark Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. I'd like to take just a minute to talk to you about our experience with Blue Water Broadcast. One of the hot topics in our staff meetings is spending advertising dollars. If your company or firm is anything like Clark Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing, those dollars are limited, so you have to spend them wisely. That's why we choose Blue Water Broadcasting. Our marketing analysis has proven consistently that spending advertising dollars with Blue Water Broadcasting has contributed significantly to our bottom line. And for that, Clark Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing is truly grateful. So, if you want to spend your advertising dollars wisely, choose Blue Water Broadcasting and see the difference.
Call us at Blue Water Broadcasting and find out how we can help grow your business. Blue Water Broadcasting. Local folks helping local business.
Rich Thomas Weather, a service of Wiley Sanders Trucking, one of the nation's largest truck lines. They need drivers right now. If you want to know what your home time and your paycheck is going to be every week, call Wiley Sanders right now. Family owned and operated. 855-777-9785.
Rich Thomas Weather.
Hi, everybody. Quiet weather for now. Lots of sunshine today. Should be nice. High in the low to mid-60s. Clear, chilly tonight, low temperature 36. Tomorrow, warmer, high in the upper 60s. Still dry, clouds increasing. Low 70s Friday, risk of a few showers, maybe a thunderstorm. Then Saturday, the concern continues to grow for severe weather. We are in an enhanced risk with the possibility of severe thunderstorms and tornadoes. Potentially a significant severe weather outbreak. We'll keep you up to date, and we want you to be weather aware. Get our weather app on your phone or tablet now. Go to the App Store, search Rich Thomas Weather. Saturday's high well up in the mid-70s. From the Blue Water Weather Center, this is Rich Thomas.
On FM, on your smartphone, and online, the River Region's most trusted voice, News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Now, back to Dan Morris on News Talk 93.1 WACV.
Dr. David Sorensen joining us today, Middle East expert, Air War College, Montgomery, Alabama. Good friend of the show, very knowledgeable, as always. Dr. Sorensen, in the president's statement today, he said he's going to ask NATO to take more of a role in the Middle East. Tell me what you think that looks like, and is that a good idea?
I doubt that many NATO countries are really going to step up unless the risk of escalation goes way down. Yesterday, there are a few NATO countries still had forces in Iraq, and it's very few announced they were withdrawing their forces because they don't want to get caught up in the crossfire. NATO, to me, works best when NATO is focused on Europe. It's been a challenge to get most NATO countries to contribute the required 2% of their gross national income to national defense. And my sense is that it would be better for them to bolster their defense in Europe. Russia is still there. Russia is a rising power. And given the potential for trouble, particularly in the northern part of Europe and in the Baltic republics, I would argue that the NATO countries would be better off serving in Europe. My sense is that the better option is to do what we've been doing, which is to continue to train the Iraqi military, which went from being a complete disaster in 2014 when it simply collapsed in the face of ISIS to becoming a much better, more effective, more professional military force. It was very effective in helping finally to roll back ISIS in Iraq. The same thing is true with some of the Gulf militaries. Now, some of them have challenges, but there are some militaries that are really quite good. The United Arab Emirates has a highly professional military, well-trained, operates modern equipment, and they have unfortunately been bogged down in Yemen. But the crown prince of UAE has finally decided it's time to withdraw their forces and focus more on the bigger threats, which include Iran. So I think it's better for the United States to partner with regional militaries, because those are militaries from countries that have a real interest in limiting Iranian influence, but also in limiting the influence of groups like ISIS. ISIS has not gone away. The caliphate was defeated, which good for the United States, good for the Kurds, good for, in fact, the Shia militia who did that. But it hasn't gone away, and it feeds on corruption. It feeds on poor governance. It feeds on dissatisfaction, bad economy, and so forth. So, well, the United States, I think, was badly mistaken to think we could somehow remake the region as a democratic, market-oriented place. Nevertheless, I think it is useful for the United States to support the building up of good militaries and to do what we can, at least, to try to help limit corruption, help limit the kind of endemic unemployment that is too tragically common in many Arab countries in particular. I think it would help to keep on working for some kind of solution to the Israeli-Palestinian problem. It's hard to solve, but I think that to try to minimize the impact of the Palestinian-Israeli situation just provides less fuel for groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the Islamic Jihad in Palestine to get converts and to develop a cause.
Let's go back to the Kurd forces in Soleimani's absence. Is there, and I asked you this the last time we talked, how much command and control do they have over these proxy groups that are out there? And is it possible that somebody feels, well, I don't like the U.S. and I don't like Israel, so I'm going to go attack them on my own versus getting some type of command and control from Iran?
What is really important about the assassination of General Soleimani is that he had personal contact with the group, the leaders of almost all of the Shia militias throughout the region, in Lebanon, in Yemen, in Iraq, in Syria. In this region, personal connections, trust, face-to-face meetings matters more than anything else. And the elimination of General Soleimani has dramatically weakened the Quds forces' ability to reach out. His second in command, a guy named Ismail Qani, has been his deputy since 2007. He does not have the kind of charisma that Soleimani has or had. He does not have the kind of personal relationship with so many of these militias that Soleimani had. And so I would argue that Soleimani's death is a real blow to the Quds force, because the Quds force is really, in many ways, Iran's foreign policy. And without those personal connections, some of these groups are going to go off on their own. It is useful to remember that most of these groups are Arab-speaking Shia, and that's a difference between the Persian-speaking Shia. There's always been that sense that the Iranians are arrogant because they regard themselves as the real Shia because they speak Persian, and we Arab Shia are kind of second-class citizens. Soleimani could bridge that because, again, of the personal relationships he had with many of the Arab-speaking heads of Shia militia. That's gone now. And I think it's going to take the Quds force a very long time, if ever, to really kind of recover back those connections and the ability to work politics in Lebanon, to work politics in Syria, to work politics in Iraq in particular, because Soleimani had some real quarrels with some of the Shia militias, and so he was able to work with others in order to kind of balance power. That's gone now. So my sense is that Iran's overall radical policy towards supporting these radical Shia militias really has been harmed in ways that we just haven't really anticipated.
The head of Iran, Khamenei, is tell me about him. I was hearing that his health is not good. He's 80 years old. Is that what you confirm?
His health is, I was actually surprised that he showed up at the funeral, because he is reportedly ill with, I've heard, prostate cancer, I've heard stomach cancer. He is in his 80s. He was never the kind of leader that his predecessor Khamenei was. He didn't have the religious credentials. He was a compromised candidate, and he has always striven to try to get the kind of emulation that Khamenei had. So his weakness, his age, and the fact that nobody is quite sure who is going to replace him. There's apparently a fight within the clerical community. So I think that his age, I think that his association with Iran's failing economy is in many ways weakening not only him as the supreme leader, but more than that, I think it's weakening the position of the clerics overall. The clerics have been increasingly unpopular for years. Iranians, interestingly enough, are not that religious. And in fact, I just read yesterday an interview with Ambassador Ryan Crocker, who's one of the most knowledgeable U.S. Middle Eastern experts who know Soleimani. And Ambassador Crocker said, okay, how religious is he? And the answer came back, he's not really religious at all. He doesn't really pray a lot. He's much more of a nationalist than a religious figure. So I think that it's interesting that the role of religion in Iran has always been overestimated, because we see this kind of crazy behavior by the clerics and the commemoration during the Ashura celebrations. The argument is that I make is that Iranians would much rather party, drink alcohol, dance,
my kind of people.
And raise, well, yeah, it's interesting. There's a whole car culture in Iran. They love American muscle cars. There's a Mustang Club, Ford Mustang Club in Tehran. So Iranians tend to be much less religiously oriented than some of the communities across from them, across the Gulf. And I think that the unhappiness over the economy, the unhappiness over the religious strictures that the clerics have imposed really have weakened the hand of the clerics. And I think that, again, this may be the time for the United States and Saudi Arabia and the Emirates to begin to work towards an improvement in relations, because, again, it's not as much about Shia versus Sunni as it is. It's a contest about memory. You know, the Iranians can cite all kinds of things the Americans did. The Americans can cite all kinds of things that the Iranians have done. But this is not a quarrel about territory. It's not a quarrel, as we used to see in Europe, between countries about borders. It's much more of a quarrel over memory. But we, the Iranians, again, we have some common interest, and I think it would be useful for both sides to begin to work on trying to use those to bridge the differences.
Interesting. The you know, when it rains, it pours. Let's talk about the Ukrainian aircraft that crashed in Tehran. Do you suspect that there was a problem with that, that somebody had an errant missile that hit it?
I don't know. I wish I knew more about why airplanes crash. I've read the reports. Apparently the airplane was new. It was built in 2016. It was not the 737 MAX. It was a standard airplane with a very good safety record. It was a normal takeoff, and all of a sudden it just disappeared. Reports have it on fire as it came down. That suggests, to me at least, that it certainly could have been hit by an errant missile. I don't know that for sure, and I want to hold off commentary. I think it's unfortunate that Iran is not going to turn the black box over to Boeing.
That told me a lot there.
Yes, it does. And I don't think it's just we don't like the Americans. I think it tells me more that, well, there's something in that black box that we would really rather not have anybody find out. It's certainly a good thing, I think, that the Federal Aviation Administration has issued what we call a NOTAM that keeps American airliners completely out of that region until things calm down. Because, again, when you're taking off from Tehran and missiles are flying, you are putting an airplane at risk. And I think that is certainly what could have happened. Again, I want to hold judgment until we find out more, which we may or may not do. But it's suspicious to me.
NOTAM being, notice all airline pilots there, the something we used to put up for the president. Then just to add more to Iran, then they had several earthquakes last night.
Yes.
Is Allah mad?
No, unfortunately, Iran is one of the most earthquake-prone countries in the world. It is interesting that Iranian concrete is among the best in the world. Because Iran has so many earthquakes, Iran has whole schools of engineering to learn how to make concrete that's earthquake resistant. So again, the history of absolutely catastrophic earthquakes. In the 1990s, the Iranian city of Bam was just devastated. 20, 30,000, 40,000 people died. So, no, it's not unusual. I think this is just an unfortunate coincidence of nature. Iran is located in an area which is not only fault-prone, but drought-prone. The central desert in Iran is like talcum powder. Iran has the highest rate of soil erosion in the world, which means that Iran is having a very hard time providing its citizens with basic things like food. So Iran imports food. It is a very vulnerable country in many, many ways.
And looking at this, do you think that the people of Iran, we saw the demonstrations on Soleimani's funeral, the people that they had the stampede, 42 people killed. Do you think that the discontent among society is starting to take hold in looking at what happened with Soleimani and their economy? And the president said he's going to add more sanctions. That had to be disturbing to them.
Well, except that we've got sanctions so deep and enmeshed, that's mostly rhetorical. There's just not a whole lot more that we can sanction because the sanctions are double and triple. We've got sanctions not only against directly Iran and the Quds Force. Many of these sanctions, by the way, go back for years. But we also sanction any company based outside the United States that has an American partner. So, for example, Airbus can no longer sell aircraft to Iran because it's partnered with Northrop Grumman. So the sanctions are, in many ways, it's a formality. It's also interesting that the Iraqis, desperate for cash, have also been allowing a lot of oil and other stuff to get into Iran. So unfortunately, what the sanctions do is they create an underground industry of sanctions evasion. And I don't think that's going to have a whole lot of effect. There's no question that the Iranians are increasingly unhappy about the economy, increasingly unhappy about the corruption. And before the death of General Soleimani, demonstrations took place in 28 out of 31 provinces in Iran. That says something about how widespread the unhappiness is, mostly with the clerics, but also with the president. Now, the death of General Soleimani has, I would argue, briefly brought Iranians together. They're now united in anger that the United States assassinated this very popular general. I think underneath that, once we scratch that away, some Iranians are going to say, well, maybe we're better off without him. Because there was also a lot of unhappiness in Iran about Iran spending money outside of Iran, given the poverty and discontent within the country. And so in response, the latest budget reduced funding to Hezbollah by 15% and reduced funding to the Houthi in Yemen by about 10%. But there's still unhappiness about Iran's foreign adventures. A lot of that foreign adventure was directed by General Soleimani. So I think in a few weeks, we may see Iranians, after they have overcome their grief, come back and say, maybe we're better off without him, because maybe the government will stop giving so much support to the Shia militias in Damascus, in Yemen, in Lebanon, in Iraq, and start spending more money at home where we need it.
Interesting. Let me take a quick break, Dr. Sorensen, and I'll come back. I have questions on Iraq and their parliament and the vote that they had and kind of what their leadership is like. Going to be back with Dr. David Sorensen right after this.
From the moment we met, you could see that I was filled with desire.
The Dan Morris Show.
Going to work or coming home, Greg Budell is there. Mornings 6 till 9 and afternoons 3 till 6. Only on News Talk 93.1 FM WACV.
What's your biggest investment? More than likely, it's your home. So treat it that way when you hire a painting contractor. At PBS Painting, there are no gimmicks, no $99 specials. Just quality painting and someone who treats your home with the same respect that you do. At PBS Painting, we have been painting for years and look forward to many more years to come. With PBS Painting, the job gets prepped properly, whether it's cleaning, scraping, or priming. We always use quality products, which is a must for a quality paint job. So if you're looking for a painter that doesn't need upfront money and is on the job at all times, then please give me a call. Scott Bowers and PBS Painting, 294-5122. That's PBS Painting, 294-5122. Look at some of our work on Facebook at PBS Painting Montgomery.
When news happens, you'll hear about it first. The River Region's most trusted voice. News Talk 93.1 FM WACV.
Now, back to Dan Morris on News Talk 93.1 WACV.
That's where we are. Dr. David Sorensen on the phone with us, doing an update on what happened last night and the things that are happening today. Dr. Sorensen, there was a vote in the Iraqi parliament talking about U.S. forces leaving, but it was a non-binding vote. How do you read that, and are they serious? And what the fact that the Kurds were not there and some other folks were not there, how do you think this is going to play out?
It's hard to say. Iraq government is in a complete shambles. The Iraqi people have been just as unhappy, if not more so, than the Iranian people about the government's failure to deliver basic services, the corruption, the lack of electric power, the lack of almost everything. A few months ago, Iraq's Prime Minister Adel Abdel Mahdi said he would resign. He has resigned. The problem is nobody else wants the job, so he's kind of sitting there as a caretaker. Yeah, it's there's a long ad. Anybody who wants to be prime minister, please fill in here. it's a difficult job because, again, it's trying to balance three religious factions. The Kurds have the presidency. The Shia have the prime ministership. It's in many ways, it's a mess. The parliament, I think, took that vote. Again, the Kurds were not there. I think it was a protest vote. My sense is that as the acting prime minister, he wakes up and thinks about what he just said, he's probably going to not demand that the United States withdraw forces because, again, he understands how vulnerable his country is to do things. Iranian-sponsored militia and the rise of ISIS. So, I think as long as the United States doesn't increase its troop level beyond, it's about 5,200 now, way down from the hundreds of thousands we had there after 2003, and keeps the forces kind of where they are now in remote bases, and doesn't try to meddle in Iraqi politics, which we have not, which is, I think, a very positive thing. I think that the prime minister will quietly let that particular vote go and ignore it, because Iraqis benefit in many ways from having Americans there, mostly as trainers, because, again, we did dramatically improve the quality of the Iraqi military, and I think we're going to have to continue to do that.
One of the folks that are out at Maxwell was talking about the fact that there's so many dollars, U.S. dollars, that touch Iraq because of U.S. presence that they were there. And if you took that away, wouldn't that have a devastating effect on their economy?
Well, it could. We're not spending that much. We don't give them that much aid anymore. We've cut back on foreign aid. But, yeah, the money we spend keeping the American forces there ultimately will percolate into the Iraqi economy. There's some military assistance that's coming in, and again, Iraqis are paid to help maintain that. So it's not a huge amount of money, but again, given the Iraqi economy, which should be doing really well given its oil, anything helps.
That old corruption will get you every time here. In closing here, are you more optimistic about U.S., Iran getting together and actually coming up with something? And are you still back on the third-party negotiator from Qatar or UAE to be talking to Iran?
Yes, I am more optimistic. I think that I'm not sure it was necessary to assassinate General Soleimani, but it's happened, and I think both Iran and the United States have realized how dangerous this could be. I think both Iran and the United States took the necessary limited measures, and hopefully we've now demonstrated, we've flexed our muscles, but we've also demonstrated that we understand the limits, that this conflict getting out of hand could be catastrophic. To close the Straits of Hormuz, even for a few days, would eliminate 30% of the world's oil, and that would lead to a global economic catastrophe. So I noticed that
oil prices only went up $1 today. If this would have been 7 years ago, it would have hit 100.
Yes. That's partly because there's so much more oil in the bunkers around the world. Countries have been storing it just in case. But, yeah, I think it also indicates that the oil traders realize that this is not necessarily going to become the cataclysm that I think many feared it would be a few years ago.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think the United States and Iran both need to sit down, particularly with the Omanis, and very quiet diplomacy, and let's see what we can figure out.
Dr. Sorensen, I've got to go.